Welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. If you have the desire to be your own boss, create your own schedule, and become financially free while at the same time helping people in need, then you've come to the right place. At GroupHomeRiches.com, we teach people exactly like yourself how to get started in the group home business. And on this podcast, you're going to hear their stories firsthand. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. Today's guest, I'm excited to talk about. So kind of a funny story. I'm into real estate investing. I'm always checking out content on there. And I actually saw this guest just a couple weeks ago. And then maybe just a couple days, maybe a week after I kind of watched his content, I see him posting in our Facebook group. So didn't even know he was a member of our community. I'm excited to have him. So today we have Patrick Legensoff with Sober Investor. Patrick, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I'm excited. I listen to your podcasts every morning on the way to work, always trying to sharpen my craft and learn.
Love to hear about it. So I'm excited to hear about your business and kind of maybe your experience with real estate investing. I'm guessing you probably have a little bit of that before you got into this industry. But before we kind of get into the business stuff, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background, where you're from, and then what you were doing before this, and then how you even got into this industry?
Perfect, man. So I got into this industry, I am sober. I started doing hard drugs at the age of 11. I grew up with an addict mother in the household, a broken home, living with my grandmother. Got into a lot of trouble in and out of juvenile detention from the age of 12 to 18. Every summer I was in juvenile detention. I spent 7 Fourth of Julys in there, man. So I definitely celebrate that pretty hard. I've been homeless multiples of times. I'm a high school dropout. My mom ended up going to prison when I was like 16, turning 17, and my drug use and dealing and all of that got out of control. My grandmother then passed away. I was homeless. My dad flew me out to Tennessee to try to start over there. And he pretty much said, you got like 3 weeks to get a place, get a job. And I got my own things and my own responsibilities. And so I did that. And I quickly started partying out there, doing some of the same things that I was doing here in Arizona. I became homeless again in Tennessee. At this time, my mom is out of prison and she was sober and she flew me back out here. And she said I had to be sober to live with her. And I said, sure. But first night I was out, I was back to using, drinking. And I just did that for a while. And then I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I ended up getting sober at the age of 23. My mom at the time, before I'd got sober, she was managing a sober living. And this sober living had 42 beds. It was one of the larger sober livings in the Phoenix, Arizona area. And at that time, I had no idea what that was. And she ran the numbers. She told me that these people were paying $160 a week. There was 42 beds. There was only 2 staff members. And at that time, I think they were getting paid $10 an hour. She lived on site and I seen all of the people it was helping. And I loved the idea. When I got sober, I went through the whole rehab, detox, and eventually moved into a sober living. The sober livings, I had no money at the time, and somebody gave me an opportunity on a promise to pay bed, meaning I had no money, no job, no nothing. And the sober livings that I was in, the first one was like a bunkhouse with 15 bunk beds, 30 guys. The next one, I was like sleeping with a mattress on the floor, bugs everywhere. It wasn't the nicest of places. And I knew in 2013 that I really, really wanted to start a sober living home and to be better than everybody else. It did take me some time to get there. Once I got sober, started a vaping company, and I'm a workaholic. I'm used to having 5 jobs and just going nonstop. And I did that up until 2019. I made a decision to stop putting work before everything because I was missing the soccer practices. I was missing the dance recitals and all of these things with my kids. So I decided to put God, AA, family, friends, and then work. 2019, between my wife and I, it was our worst year financially. I think we made $30,000 between the two of us. But it was my best year with my family, best year connecting with God and AA. And I had some time on my hands and I wanted to finally pursue getting my real estate license. I am a three-time felon and I did a quick Google search here in Arizona. Can a felon get his real estate license? Everything that I read said, yeah, probably you can. So I took all the tests, spent the money and passed all the tests. And then I did another quick Google search and then everything that day said you probably can't. So I started the process of getting my record set aside and I was still bartending and doing these things. One night I was going to a mansion. It was like a $3 million mansion. I thought I was going to make a lot of money. My boss called me at the last minute and said, so sorry, can you go here? And I looked it up. It was a $4 million mansion. I was like, okay, cool. I'm still waiting for my record to be set aside. I don't have my real estate license. And you said yourself that you are a real estate investor and in this world. So this mansion party that I was bartending, I was setting up my bar. There was a cornhole game with like a logo on it, with it looked like a house. I looked it up and the company was Stunning Homes Realty, and the owner of that was Steve Trang. And I was like, oh my God, that's the guy who I've been talking to. So I'm talking to him. I was like, so you're in real estate? And he laughed. And I told him at the time that I had my real estate license, which was not true. But he said, you hit a gold mine. The biggest real estate investors, companies, agents will be here tonight. It was Steve Trang's 40th birthday party. And I didn't know how to speak the language at the time, but Jamil Damji was there, Steve Trang, Pace Morby, Elijah Rubin, all of these huge, huge names were there. And everybody who came up to my bar, I'm asking. And at the end, they did a toast to Steve Trang and said, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. And in my mind that day, I was going to do anything and everything possible to be in that circle. And a few days later, I ended up getting my record set aside, got my license and hung my real estate license with Steve Trang. He is big in the wholesale world. I had no idea what wholesaling was, never had made a cold call in my life. And he had a class coming up. It was $5,000. I didn't have it. I borrowed it against a credit card to go to this class. And these are people flying from all over the country to refine their wholesaling operation. And I had never made a cold call in my life, but I did it. I put in the action, started sending out text blasts, and I found a deal. They wanted $600. It was worth $800. I called this guy and that guy said he would look at it. I'm still serving tables and bartending at this time at a restaurant. An hour later, I'm at my restaurant job and that same guy who I sent that deal to came into my restaurant just by chance. And I pitched him the idea. At this time, I knew I wanted to do sober living. So I was calling for sale or for lease by owners. I was calling agents. I was just calling everywhere and getting denied. And I pitched the idea to this guy who I was serving, who I sent that deal to. At first, he was kind of iffy. And by the end of the conversation, he said, if you meet me here tomorrow with, I think it was $5,000, I will give you a chance and I'll give you an opportunity. I again had to borrow money from my mother-in-law and my mother because I didn't have it at the time. And I did a rental arbitrage on that property. I did hit some bumps and bruises, but I had the house full within the first week, had a manager take all the money the second week, and then hired a new manager, figured it out. And this was February of 2020 when I got my first sober living. And then by August of 2020, I had 10 sober livings from that same investor.
Dude, a lot of lessons in there to unpack for our audience. So let me make sure I got the timeline correct. 2019 was not the low point, but just, I guess, the financial kind of low point, right? Where it was just you and your wife kind of focusing on family. And then that was kind of the year where you decided to kind of set your sights on real estate, right? 2019-ish. Yep. And yep. Then would you say that first deal was what, about a year later?
No. So 2019, I waited to the end of the year. So that bartending thing I did was about November going into December, and just all of the, gotcha. Again, I didn't have a lot of money. So I didn't want to pay all of those fees and all of that until the beginning of the year. So I got my real estate license January 1st of 2020.
Cool. And then you went to the party a couple months into the year, and that's when things kind of started rolling for you.
Yeah. So I've come from industries where everybody's just close to the vest. They don't want to give away their secrets. And the conversations that I heard that night and just the experience that I've had in this real estate community is just a breath of fresh air. Everyone genuinely wants to see you win, wants to see you succeed. And it's nothing like I've ever experienced, but it's been super amazing.
I'm always trying to encourage our folks that are looking to work with investors, like, just go to a real estate meetup, right? Like, you were kind of lucky enough to, you know, you were in the room with investors as the bartender, but you could go on meetup.com and you guys can find places like this in every major city. Usually, like, every week, every couple of weeks, there'll be a meetup like this. Maybe not with the big dogs that Patrick mentioned, because I recognize all those guys, but there's people like that in every city. And Patrick hit the nail on the head. They're extremely warm. They're extremely friendly. They want to help people, especially they want to help people that are helping themselves, that are actually putting in work. So you'll notice that Patrick, as soon as he kind of got things going, he didn't sit around and wait. I also kind of want to highlight a little bit here. You said you got your first deal after hitting the phone and making cold calls and doing texts and things like that. So just to give the people an idea of like how hard you could go with your marketing, it wasn't like you made like 5, 6, 7 phone calls and got that deal, right? How many cold calls and like texts did you have to go through before you got that first deal?
So I did the texting with to find this investor guy, but before that, I probably made 100 phone calls. My pitch was not down, and just trying to explain to somebody you're going to have 10 ex-drug addicts in your house is not the best way to explain it. And I just kept getting turned down left and right, and 100 plus calls. But again, the laws of attraction, the more you talk about it, the more it's come to you. I was telling everybody, yeah, I'm starting this sober living, or I have this sober living. And I was just putting it out to the universe. And crazy enough, the way that it happened, super blessed. Zach Heaps is the investor. He's one of the largest buyers here, single people buyers here in Arizona, owns 213 properties. He's actively flipping and buying 5 to 10 properties a month. And he's one of my best friends today.
Love it. And another kind of lesson to unpack there. Patrick didn't approach his partner. Is it business partner at this point? Mentor, kind of?
Definitely mentor and investor, not a partner.
Okay. But you brought him a deal. You didn't bring him a bunch of questions and things like that. You brought him a deal. So you approached him with value. That's another kind of lesson for you folks out there. So it sounded like you were kind of going the wholesaling route. You found that deal. Was your goal to kind of, were you making those calls to flip, or was your goal to find a deal for the sober living property?
I was just putting in the action in the program that I just spent $5,000 on. Cold calling is not for me. I do not like it. So that's why I was sending out the text blast.
Character development for sure.
Oh my God, the whole smile and dial and oh my goodness. But the goal was just try to make some income from what I had learned at this thing. The real estate team that I was on, they had a Zillow contract. So every time somebody was interested in a house on Zillow, I was getting all of those calls. So I was being a real estate agent while doing the sober living. But still to this day, I am partners with somebody who has a whole real estate operation. We do creative deals, wholesale deals, fix and flips, buy and holds, you name it, we do it. But me personally, in the beginning, that was not my goal. The reason I got my real estate license, in my mind, I didn't want to have to rely on anybody to know what a good deal was, what a good area was, the price of a house. So I did it more for the knowledge. But the whole goal the whole time was to do sober livings.
Beautiful. So you got that first property, and then let's rewind there. Let's take it back to there. So you got the first property, had the investor, had to fix it up, right? And then I think you, it didn't take long to fill up. It didn't sound like.
It took a week to fill it up and everything was going great. And then the second week, I call the manager who is supposed to be collecting rent. He doesn't pick up. Called him a few times. I go to the house. A guy opens the door with a big vodka bottle in his hand, and the manager's room is cleared out and the money is gone. So I was like, oh no. And then found another manager who had experience, kicked all those people out, got it filled up again in a week. But if you kind of hear the date that I started this, February of 2020, good old COVID, I lost my bartending serving job. Everybody in my house lost their job. And at this point, I had borrowed money for this house. I'm like, God, I'm not going to kick these guys out. What do you want me to do? And there was a temp agency around the corner and Amazon was hiring and everybody followed suit. Everybody got a job at Amazon and paid me everything that I was owed. And then I just, knowing me being a workaholic, I told myself I'm going to open up 3 sober livings and quit bartending job. But me being who I am, I probably would have done them both as long as I could. But COVID, I know for a lot of individuals out there, I'm sorry for what COVID has done, but COVID did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And it made me fully focus on me. And that's what exploded what I was doing.
So did you quit the bartending gig to go full force on the sober living business at that time?
I lost my job because of COVID.
Got you. Okay.
It closed.
Little bit of a blessing in disguise.
Yes.
So that was the first property, obviously had those hiccups in the beginning, major hiccups. Why don't you talk to the folks a little bit, touch on like just the beginning steps to opening that property. Like, how did you find the tenants? Did you need to, what I'm curious too, did you need to go through the licensing process, and how did you find the manager and all that stuff?
In the beginning, the whole licensing thing was new-ish to me. There is a organization out here that is connected with NARR, the National Recovery Association. They man things out here. They gave me a mentor and I became a part of them and I was able to get licensed for a sober living through them. And I was thankful enough, the mentor, they gave me their policies and procedures, kind of walked me through their houses, how they run things. The first house, so I had all the paperwork, had all the knowledge, had all of that. And then furnishing the home, again, I have no money at this time, borrowing money. My first house was furnished for $900. It was a thrift store special. None of the forks matched. None of the spoons matched. None of the sheets matched. Every dresser was different, but we buy everything secondhand to furnish this first home to get it up and going. To get the people in the house, again, I am sober. I still, to this day, I go to AA meetings. I sponsor people. I speak at detox centers and things like that. So I have a network of people that I just reach out to. Hey guys, I have a house now, but I was hanging up the old school pull tab, pull number flyers at some of the meeting halls, contacting the detox facilities in the area, looking for behavioral health companies of inpatient, outpatient for people graduating. But I reached out to my network and reached out to the facilities that were near the house.
Beautiful. How long did it take for you to go to get the licensing for that?
When you're going through, it's called ASRA out here. When you're going through ASRA, you don't have the waiting times beckoning at the state, and the state recognizes them. So all I had to do is set up inspection, become a member, which you have to go to like two meetings in their monthly meetings. But I had already started that process before getting the house. But to actually get it licensed, it was really easy. Called them up, they inspected the next week, and then you go in and put an application in with that certificate, and they don't have to come out. They automatically approve you.
Oh, beautiful. So at being part of that organization, they kind of help you to streamline the process.
Yes. And when I started getting more houses, I have five houses to inspect or whatever the number is. They can hit all five houses in one day. But if you're at the waiting on the state will not do that. And they take their time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, kind of how we like to avoid that stuff altogether. So you got that first property, got it rocking and rolling, used kind of your, you were kind of, you know, you're already in the, you know, through the your personal struggles, you're already kind of in that community, right? So you had the connections, got it filled up quick. How many bedrooms was that first property?
That house was five bedrooms, 3,000 square feet. The smallest room I gave to a manager. He lives there rent free, and he does, he collects rent from me, make sure nobody's doing anything crazy in the house. He keeps up with the books. Helps me fill it, helps get the word out. Yeah.
Very cool. Is it roommates? Like how many beds total?
10 beds. Here in Arizona, there's a spacing requirement of 50,000 square feet per person. If you go over that 10 number, then you become not a residential sober living, you become a facility. And then the city wants you to put fire sprinklers in. So the majority of my, well, all of my houses right now are 10 beds.
Very cool. Are you providing like any services to your residents, or is it, are you just focusing on the housing side of things?
My first 10, it was just focusing on the housing side of things. But again, I try to go above and beyond. We help with resume building, resources, financial literacy, coaching, and stuff like that. So again, my goal when I opened up my first sober living was to be better than every other one that was out there. And all of the houses that I get from my investors completely remodeled. We provide supplies that other houses don't. And most of my houses have amenities. A few of them used to be Airbnbs. They have pool tables, they have a pool, a jacuzzi, movie theater. So we were at the top of everybody's referral list. Everybody wanted to come to our house, especially in Arizona. Pool is definitely a plus.
How important would you say the word of mouth is like that in for your business, like the reputation and word of mouth and everything?
I'll get into some of the other stuff, but I just recently hired a business coach, and I've been in the industry. My wife and I have been in the industry now for about 10 years and been doing it on our own since 2020. I just recently, but my business coach went cross-eyed. I've never done any type of paid marketing. I'm learning how to use a CRM, lead management, lead follow-up, all of those things I have never done until recently. And when I tell you the other things that I've done and the success I had, same thing there. But I've never done any of those things. So word of mouth and free Facebook posts is what got me to where I'm at today. And just being better than everybody at the top of everybody's referral list. And I don't know how to say no. If there's a need for it, I'm going to open up another house. So another thing to stay at the top of those referral lists. And it's a double-edged sword. If a company calls you three times and you're completely full, you start slowly going down that list because you never have openings. It's good for you because you're always full, but you get lower on that referral list if you don't have what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. And your the kind of skills you learned with real estate, I'm sure, has kind of helped you some beds open for people. So But I just want to get the point across to, we have a lot of people out there. They come from like a nursing background or social work. They really have the heart to help and they kind of sit on the fence. But I want the people to know that just the fact that you guys have that background, you have the heart to help, you want to kind of go above and beyond. I think that that helps a lot to kind of get, stay on the top of the list for these referrals. Cause as Patrick mentioned, a lot of the properties that he was staying in, I mean, we'll keep it rugged. We'll keep it raw and 100, right? They were slumlords for the most part, it sounds like.
Yes, it was pretty bad. And again, I go by the sober investor. I get a ton of calls every single day and the shiny object syndrome from these investors, their heart's not in, they're just in it for the money. I mean, if you have a front runner like me involved, then cool, but they're the ones who don't do really well. If you actually have a passion and a why, and again, I found my why, I found my passion, it is helping people. I had no idea the financial benefit from these things. I just knew I wanted to help people. And one of my favorite books is The Go-Giver. The more you give, not expecting anything in return, is when your life truly flourishes. And I'm a true testament to that every single day.
I love that. And yeah, I've heard that book and I'm familiar with the overall concept, but I agree 100%. Like, even if you start to, there's something about the universe, like if you give, it like changes your feelings with money, I think. Like if you give to charity or you don't even think about the financials, like one of our things that we like to say is like, hey, the more people that you help, the more money you're going to make. It's just a cause and effect kind of thing. So I love to hear that. But yeah, so for the folks out there that you are in it for the right reasons, that is going to help you guys immensely. But you do need the action to kind of match that. And as Patrick mentioned, he spent absolutely zero time figuring out like which CRM he's going to use. He didn't waste any time how to figure out Facebook ads and Google ads. And, you know, he didn't sit around and pretend to do business. He just went out there, took action and made it happen. And now he can figure all that stuff out now. But I love to hear that, man. So for the folks out there, maybe they come from the real estate side of things. Patrick made an amazing point. It's not really passive. You know, don't look at this as just like an easy passive income. If anybody reaches out to us and like the first thing we're going to ask is, hey, what brought you to this industry? Why do you want to do this? If anybody says, oh, I'm just looking for like a passive stream of income, cool, good luck to you. But, you know, this isn't for you. But what are some of the advantages of this type of real estate investing? Because at the end of the day, it is a real estate niche, right? What are some of the advantages that this business model offers compared to like the typical other strategies like wholesaling, fix and flip, or buying and holding? Let's start there. Why do this instead of just renting it out to like one single individual that's qualified?
Anybody out there, and I hear it all the time, and it just strikes a nerve. Anybody that's out there saying that long-term rentals, you're making passive income of $200 a month, is a joke, man. I rented one of my properties to a family of like five, and the amount of damage that they have done, that they did to my house, I had to pay about $12,000, carpet, paint, fixing cabinets. The pool pump goes out. That's freaking $2,000. I just replaced an AC unit on a property last week. That was $5,000. Property taxes is $2,000. I'm like, where is this passive income at? They're crazy. But with this model, again, I've done other things. I don't know if you want me to go into those that are way more. It was way more financially better, but just the regular sober living model, that is cash pay out of their pocket. Each one of my properties, actually taking into consideration all of those things that I just said, they net me anywhere from $1,000 to $4,000 per property per month on a regular sober living. But some of the other exit strategies and some of the other types of housing I do nets me 10 times more than that. So, but, and it's just a sober living, my very first one that I told you about, I haven't remodeled it. I haven't repainted it. Haven't done anything to it. It still looks the same as I got it day one. The way it looks today. I have 10 guys in my houses, our women, whoever, that do chores every single day, that upkeep the house every single day. And they happen to be handy and in some kind of trade. And they start fixing up the house themselves and doing touch-up paint themselves because I have a nice house and they take pride where they're staying. So it's funny to me, these guys, oh, I'm just going to do long-term. I'm like, go ahead, man. That's your game and I want nothing to do with it.
But Patrick, you just need to find 10 properties that cash flow $200 each, and then you got $20,000 of passive income, bro.
It's so funny to me that people, I mean, the creative finance, they look for deals that cash flow 200 and up. And I'm just like, yes, real estate is amazing if you can get into those deals for tax benefits and maybe generational wealth. But right now, money, passive money today, I it's not there.
Agreed. I'm just joking around a little bit, but yeah, it's $200. That's like if nothing goes wrong, right? If your numbers are perfect, if your rehab doesn't go over budget, if nothing goes wrong with the property, if people take perfect care of it. So I agree 100%. I think that strategy is great. I think if you have a lot of cash, you need to put it away, put it into real estate, get a property management company. You don't really need to worry about the cash flow. But let's be real. Most of the people that are listening through podcasts, looking for ways to make money, they don't have that problem yet, right? You don't have, man, I got too much cash in the bank. What should I do? So before you get there, you need a cash vehicle, you know, sales, wholesaling. And I think this could be one for folks that do have that certain background and passion and that type of personality. So for the folks out there that maybe they are a buy and hold investor and they kind of believed that passive income myth, they thought that that was going to be their cash vehicle. They've had stories similar to yours where they have a renter in there. They don't make exactly $200 per month. And on top of that, these qualified people tore the property up. Imagine the misconceptions that they have when they just picture a sober living property. Right. So instead of just one qualified individual or tenant, you have 10 people that are trying to get sober. What are some of the things that you do with your business, with your homes to kind of mitigate the bad situations that could happen? That's obviously good, running through their minds right now.
Again, these guys, I call them mini masterminds because these guys are all trying to accomplish the same thing. And we're getting like-minded individuals together in a house that are all there to support each other and take that next step. And with the structure that we have in place and the resources we give them and the love that we give these guys, they want to give that love in return. They don't want to disappoint me or their house manager, and they actually want to do better and get better. And when those bad players do come in, the house will immediately let us know, like, hey, this guy is not a good fit. So just building that culture, building that structure around it. And again, these guys, my houses are in pristine shape, doing really well. We really haven't had too many problems with the housing. So yes, I mean, they have a past and a background. Everybody deserves a second chance. And I'm glad I get to give them that opportunity. But any new investor or whoever coming in, I'll tell them, you can come to your house anytime you want, unannounced. You can come to one of my houses right now. I'll give you a list of them. You can pick one and we can go see it right now and you'll see what shape it is in. And you can be the judge of what the house looks like and what you think.
Yeah. So it's not like your typical lease, right? So each one of your house guests, it's not like they lease the property, right? Like, is it month to month or what type of an agreement do you have with the tenants?
So, I mean, I jokingly say this, but it's true. I have them sign 56 pieces of paper when they come in. And if they look at me wrong, I can kick them out. It's not a leasing agreement. They're just there week to week. And again, landlord-tenant laws, if they were to take me to court, potentially there could be a different situation there. But these individuals do not want to go to court or do any of those things. And I haven't had a problem whatsoever. So it's definitely the paperwork's in place to let them know what is expected of them. And if they don't follow that, then they will be kicked out.
Yeah. So that hits it right there. Like the way we do it, you know, we have house rules. So if they, same thing, if they, I don't know if ours is that rock solid. So if they look at us wrong, they could get the boot. But to, like, let's say they just leave their dishes out. They're not cleaning up their dishes. In theory, we could ask them to leave at that point. You know, we're not going to do, we usually give a warning. But yeah, long story short, you just have these structures in place. The agreement is set there to where if somebody does break the house rules, you could kick them out. So, and it's not like you have to go through a lengthy eviction process because it's not a lease, right? And you kind of touched on it. You have no deferred maintenance for the most part, because if there is anything wrong, or one, you have them upkeeping the property for you, but if there are any like maintenance issues, what's that process like?
I now have a full-time guy for the maintenance. He was actually off yesterday in my office here. We were having problems with the swamp cooler in the warehouse space, and we just put a message out to all the houses. Hey, does anybody have experience? And it's doing not God's work, but it's putting in work for their sobriety. I can't think of the word right now, but there's usually a trade in my house that we don't really have to call outside of our community to get some of these things done. But I do have a full-time maintenance guy. He is one of my house managers, and he has experience with AC, plumbing, electrical. He can pretty much do anything and everything. And I have him doing a bunch of other things for me, because I have so many now. But those 10 sober livings in the beginning, I was managing them all myself with only 5 hours of my time every week. And everybody's thinking like, oh my God, this is going to be a lot of work. And I mean, if you have the right systems and the right structure and the right managers in place, it's really not.
Yeah. So that just kind of crushes the misconceptions, right? Like with investors, when they hear, so 10 properties, so that's roughly like 100 people, give or take. And Patrick just said he spent 5 hours per week managing those properties. So, and it's really kind of simple systems that you could put in place. I'm guessing yours are probably very similar to ours. So there's obviously the agreement up front. And also, I'm sure it's a huge thing to kind of lighten your load, is, and that's the house manager that's at each property.
Yes. My house managers, they're able to go get a job 9 to 5, make their money, and still do the duties that I have them with. So they skip in between. One of the reasons I hired a guy to be the area manager and the handyman is when those guys are at work and we have a new intake or a new admission or something happened, he can then go fill in. Because if I had a new guy coming in and they're at work, I would have to go meet with them, or somebody else would have to go meet with them. But
yeah. So when, in the beginning, when you were spending those 5 hours per week, that was kind of like the house manager would report any issues to you. You do the showings, you know, sign the papers, manage the maintenance crew. And at this point, it sounds like you've kind of replaced yourself with that position as well, with the area manager.
Absolutely. 5 hours a week, meeting these guys at their house, popping in on these houses unexpectedly. So catch them by surprise, and keeping the managers in line, and then collecting the rents.
Yeah, that was my next question. So it sounds like the majority of your tenants are they self-paying?
All self-pay, cash pay. Right now, I'm trying to get a system in place. Right now, we're like 98% cash. And the reason, yes, you can go get a cashier's check, you can go do this or that, but if they have money in their hand, I want that money in my hands as soon as possible. Because if they go to Walmart to go get a cashier's check, they might not come back. So it's just the easiest, quickest. They have it on them, take it. We're actually trying to come up with a system now that'll be more electronic, especially because we're nationwide and JVing and partnering everywhere. I don't know how much time we have left, but I do want to get into what I just started doing after the sober livings.
I'd love to hear it. Stick around after the call. We've been doing something to help with collections if any of our clients do have self-pay, and we've been doing that for our done-for-you deal people. But I'll kind of show you what we've been doing to kind of alleviate those collections. Yeah, very cool. And I'm guessing probably a big part of it is the intake process. It sounds like you have each property is like kind of a cohesive unit. Everyone's helping them. I'm guessing a big part of that is the intake process. Am I correct?
It's not that bad. It's just going over the house rules, the policies and procedures, and having them sign the paperwork. We recently tried an app out, and you could fill out the documents electronically. There's a few bugs in this app that we bought, so now I'm creating my own.
Okay. All right. Very cool. So, yeah. So even though Patrick focuses on sober living, it sounds like the business model that he broke down is pretty very similar to what we talk about in the Gold course and stuff. So it could be applied to almost any demographic. And as you can see in here, many, many advantages. If anyone kind of broke out the calculator, you could see that the cash flow is much better than 200 per month. And yeah, the numbers he broke down, that wasn't gross revenue, guys. That was actual cash flow, you know, net profit that he talked about per property. So, man, love to hear it. And you said you did 10 properties. How long did it take you to get to 10 properties?
February 2020 to August of 2020.
All right, folks, we have a new record breaker. That's a record setting year as far as I know. So,
what we focused on after that, we had probably, the first year. So we ended up having 15 properties in the first year. And then we started focusing on licensed behavioral health facilities. I had a gentleman call me saying, "Hey man, do you have a bed open at your sober living?" And he's saying, "Do you accept insurance?" I said no, but everybody around him was getting high. And he's like, "I don't want to get high and I don't want to die." And I was like, "Man, you could come stay at my house for free." He came from the prison mentality of he didn't want to feel like he owed me something. 2 weeks later, he was murdered the wrong place at the wrong time. And I vowed that day for that situation never to happen to me again. So I started studying on how to be able to take insurance. Everybody, again, this isn't the real estate community. Everybody who I called, who I knew had been in the industry doing this thing, they all pretty much said, "Oh, don't worry, you'll find your way," and gave me like a pat on the butt. And that lit a fire under me and I figured it out. So I ended up partnering with somebody. We got a commercial licensed facility, an outpatient facility where we provided therapy services. And then we had supportive housing on top of that. And we provided like group therapy, one-on-one therapy, and a bunch of different services. In our first year of that business, we went from 2 employees, 2 houses, to 60 employees and 30 houses in our first year. And we grossed $18 million in our first year of doing that. Licensed commercial, licensed residential, and providing these therapy services. And once we started doing that, again, I don't know how to say no. And then I started learning about all of these other types of housing. So I did start with sober living, but again, I do all specialized housing. We've done assisted livings. We've done veteran homes, battered women shelters, mommy and me homes, daddy and me homes, LGBTQ homes. We just opened up a kids aging out of foster care, a veteran home, and a human trafficking homes. We just don't know how to say no. When somebody asks us, "Do you have it?" If we don't have it, then I'm going to open it. And it's jumping out of the airplane and building the parachute on the way down. if there's a need for it and somebody needs help, I just don't know how to say no. And I want to figure these things out. And now, again, since I've been doing this for almost 4 years, we've gotten government grants to help fill these houses. We're in Nevada And Nevada sought us out and said, hey, can you bring your program to our state? And they have this thing called non-performing assets that they would love to give you for a good cause. We ended up buying 10 acres with 20 log cabins on it from the Girl Scouts of America, and the government bought the 40 acres around us, and they're currently building more property on that for us to be able to provide a kids program. So that's been an amazing ride, and you could do fun stuff like art therapy, pet therapy, music therapy, mentoring. There is so many more directions that you can go and more benefits to the person that's living in your house once you're able to do home health care service or inpatient, outpatient, residential services. And now with the behavioral health, I think we're up to 60 homes. And then again, I'm in Nevada, I'm in Texas. I just opened up a house in Ohio. We have one in Florida. And then we're JVing and partnering with people all over the nation to help them invest with a purpose and not just invest in real estate, but invest in changing other people's lives and providing these types of housing.
Unreal. Yeah. So you guys just got a glimpse into how big you can take this industry and the types of kind of opportunities that there are. So government partnerships, have you gotten into the nonprofit space or anything like that yet?
The same time I started my Sober Livings, I started a nonprofit, but it has nothing to do with the housing portion. We have a food pantry that's open to the public. And with my real estate connections, when they have these hoarder houses or people who leave furniture behind, if it's usable, they call me up, we pick it up, and we're helping furnish about 2 apartments a week right now. We're feeding about 100 people a week through the food pantry. We had a homeless house where we were getting the chronically homeless off of the street. And I was funding this with all of my own money. And that is by far the hardest demographic that, I mean, we've dealt with homeless before, but chronically homeless is 5 years and up. And we thought we were just going to be able to provide them a house, but they need more than just a house. And I or my team did not have time to fully focus on that initiative. There was 3 people that we got off the street that we helped with resumes, got them jobs, got them everything. When I went to go break the news to them that we were no longer going to be able to provide this house for them, but we would help them find somewhere, they came to me and said, can we take over this lease? And I was like, really? He's like, we all have jobs, we all have money, can we please take this over? And I was like, the guy who gave me my Sober Livings, we partnered on this one. So I went to him. I was like, what do you think? He's like, I want to interview him, but it sounds good to me. Those 3 guys took over the lease and they're still living in there today.
I love it. That's the real riches, right? Like when those types of stories, when you take people, you know, from the street and you see them kind of actually get their life back on track, which to rewind it, that was the whole reason you got into this, right?
The whole reason. About 3 weeks ago, I helped feed the homeless down by the homeless shelter, like Sunday mornings. I'm there and one of the guys that I was just talking about, he popped up and I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm here to volunteer. I was like, oh my God, that is amazing, man.
Seeing it come full circle.
I just got goosebumps. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that is so amazing. So
roughly how many people, it's only been like, you know, 3 years, how many people would you estimate that you have provided, you know, clean, structured housing to?
On the Sober Living side, we average about 700 to 800 people. So, I mean, 800 times 3. And then on the behavioral health side, the first year we did 600 people. The second year we did 800. And again, with all the other housing, we now have a system in place where we're keeping track of the retention rates and all of that stuff. But in the beginning, again, I just had a vision. I'm a visionary and I skipped over all of the important stuff and wasn't keeping track of anything.
Man, I encourage people to do that. What I'm doing in the emails all day long. Hey, don't worry about that stuff yet. But yeah, literally thousands of people, guys, he's helping to out of the street, out of homelessness, out of helping them to get sober. And he's moving into, you heard it, basically every demographic out there. And he's providing housing to those that really couldn't get it in much other places, which just the lack of supply for this type of housing is probably why you were able to scale so quickly, right? And all of your real estate networking, it's not like there's a ton of other investors that are dying to do this type of stuff yet, right?
We have, yeah. And just to encourage even further, we have close to 60 plus properties out there. I own 11 of them. The rest are rental arbitrage using somebody else's rental. And those are just with the connections that I have made, putting myself out there, letting people know what I do. And investors would much rather rent 10 properties to you, knowing that you pay every month on the first, rather than chasing down 10 tenants that might pay you. So it's a huge benefit to them to be able to rent more than one property to you.
So what is your system to do that? Are you working with like a couple kind of larger investors, or what's that look like?
Again, the first investor that I got by luck, he is the largest buyer, and he completely remodels all of his homes brand new. And when he gets a 5-bedroom, he'll bring me in and say, what do you think? And I could say, can you add a wall here, put a closet here? And he does that. But going into these other states, again, I have a huge, huge real estate network. We just opened up 2 houses in Texas, and I have a lot of focus in Dallas, Texas right now. And first day I flew out there and we seen 15 properties. The first property manager we talked to, they were willing to do it. And then just by talking to her, she's like, the guy who I do this for, it's a single guy, and he owns 204 properties here in Dallas, and he has a bunch more coming up. And I was like, perfect. And then in certain areas in Texas, they no longer allow the Airbnbs, and those are prime. Like, they just have a bunch of Airbnbs that are completely furnished that they can't do anything with. So I started calling all of these Airbnb operators, looking at old posts of theirs, seeing what was out there. So we're taking down a bunch of properties for the Airbnbs. And again, we have a real estate operation, but as you can imagine, with you being in real estate, there is not too many wholesale deals, creative deals, fix and flips that are 5 bedrooms in the zip code that you want. So in order to expand the way as fast as we want to, it's going to be a lot of rental arbitrage, but we're constantly sourcing deals, pulling lists, and taking stuff down. So network, 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 and especially with people who buy houses. They're in this, they eat, breathe houses every day. Reach out to real estate agents, go to the realestatemeetup.com, go out there, shake hands, see what everybody is doing, and let everybody know what you're trying to do or what you are doing.
So I love this, but one of the most common kind of issues that we have is, hey, Patrick, I can't get a landlord to work with me. So what are you saying to these people? You know, why would a landlord want to work with you instead of just renting to, you know, single family or one qualified tenant?
Funny enough, I get a bunch of these phone calls every single day. And now that my name is out there, I get investors that are trying to give me houses every single day. But again, we're working, we're JVing and partnering with people across the nations. If you want to be an operator, we can help you get the house. So I have boots on the ground in any state that I want, and I have a network of 15,000 operators. And again, the hardest part for them is getting the house, but it is how they are presenting it to a landlord. If you're saying that you want to put, again, 10 drug addicts in a house or a bunch of people that can't qualify for a regular rent, that's not the best way to approach it. So when they say that a landlord won't work with them, I ask them, what are you telling them? What is your pitch?
Exactly.
What is your script? And I give them some pointers on that as well. But we are creating a software website where landlords are going to be able to upload their properties, and they're all vetted already, willing to rent them to group home owners. And so we're going to connect our 15,000 operators and our landlords to a website to make it easier for individuals to get properties and ones that are already vetted and willing to rent to an operator.
Beautiful. And the deals with like the investors that you work with, do you offer like above market rent or split of the profit or anything like that? Or at this point, are they just happy to work with someone that's not going to call them and is going to stay there for a while?
People hate me for this. I don't pay above right now. Well, I don't pay above market rent just because of the value that I bring and the network that I have and the track record that I have. But with the landlords that are going to be able to upload their property, you can make anywhere. What I was pitching in the beginning is I'll pay you $200 more than you're asking. I will take care of any repair in the house up to $500. What else? You're not going to get a call from me at 3 o'clock in the morning because your toilet is clogged. You want to reverse engineer and think as a landlord. What does a landlord hate? They hate getting calls at 3 o'clock in the morning. They hate having to repair stuff. They hate people not taking care of their property and all these things. So reverse engineer, think as a landlord and see what problem you can solve for them. Why would they want to rent to you? And you squash all of those things, put them at ease. You can offer them 3 months up front or just make it enticing for them. And now after listening to a couple of your guys' podcasts, oh God, I think it was Andy that said it. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. He got his investor to not put the deposit down and to furnish or help furnish the property or something like that. So now we're asking investors in new markets if they'll give us the first month free or give us a 13-month lease with the first month free to get things rolling. And can you waive the deposit? No, you can't. Can you stretch that deposit across the 12 months or 13 months for us so we can get this thing up and going? There's so many different ways that you can tips, tricks, and that can definitely work in your benefit, especially if you don't have a lot of cash in your pocket. There's houses out there right now on the market that have been sitting vacant for months that would be perfect for you to come in and solve their problem.
100%. And you kind of touched on a lot of things. One, leverage. So Patrick has the leverage now to be like, look, this is what I can do. I have a proven track record, and he just rents them. So, but again, think of the advantages. Like Patrick is not just going to be in this property for like a year or two. It's a long-term thing. So these landlords are going to get paid every month on time, if not early. He's not going to be calling them to unclog the toilets and stuff like that. So these investors do want to work with him. And he has the leverage to kind of go in with that ask. So for folks that maybe if you are just starting, you're check to check, you're literally like, you're all pumped up. You want to do this. You need to know the business model. Like, just start at the very beginning, understand the basics. Like, if an investor asks you, okay, what happens if we have a problem tenant? Be able to explain that, right? And what I recommend, Patrick had already done this in his personal life. I recommend having the connections up front, have your networking and kind of referral sources in place, kind of get into the position where you need to have the property. If you feel like, okay, I need a property now or I'm missing out on money, that's the time to go start speaking with investors and they'll want to work with you. And we've kind of touched on the issues that most investors have. Once you guys understand this and you guys put yourselves in the position to be successful, you literally do solve all the problems that investors have, especially if you're willing to offer them like $200 more per month. That doesn't sound like a lot to you guys listening, but you're literally doubling their revenue if you could do that. So yeah, you got to put yourself in their shoes and also the pitch. That's pretty simple. If you just call somebody and ask them, hey, I see you have a property available. Will you rent it to me? I want to do sober living. I'm going to need you to work with me on your subletting policy. It's not a good pitch, right? So part of our Done For You program is we'll pitch investors. We have never spoken to an investor. If they're at least curious enough to speak with us, we've never talked to an investor and not have them at least interested in working with us or our clients. So yeah, if you guys are out there struggling, one, you either haven't put yourself in the position to actually follow through and like be successful, or your pitch is off. I mean, out of all the investors that you speak with, what percentage of them are like sold on the idea and want to work with you?
Now they're just knocking down my door. In the beginning, it was just like, oh, okay. But now I have investors in my back pocket that just do buy and holds. They need to buy real estate. And now they're calling me, hey, do you need another home? Where do you need it at? Do you have a house that I can buy for you? So I can call them up and say, hey, here's a house retail, and they'll go buy it retail. Or if it's a fix and flip, creative, wholesale, whatever the case is. But now I have investors that are the buy and hold investors, which you guys, those are the ones you want, the ones who are actively holding the properties. But yeah, it's investors now knock down my door, call me. Yesterday, an investor called me. She's actually here part-time in Arizona and Texas. She's like, hey, I have 11 empty houses. Do you need any? And I was like, wow.
Yeah. So you can't find the properties fast enough at this point, which that's the problem you guys want to get into. Man, unbelievable amount of value, Patrick. I think that's pretty epic example for you guys listening on one, the possibility, but two, we also kind of broke down just kind of step by step what to do. Even if you're starting at ground zero, you don't need a ton of money to do this. It's not like you have to go out there and purchase a property. You don't need hundreds of thousands of dollars. You could literally just learn the business, go network with investors like we spoke about. Yeah, you can literally get into a property with no money down if your pitch is good and if you've done, you know, the work to ask for that. So we recommend, you know, just start to walk. The Gold Course will show you how to walk, right? It's really simple. It's a very simple business model. You don't need a ton of money. And then once you do that a couple times, like Patrick did, 10 property, well, 15 in the first year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, unreal. And then that's just going to open doors. You know, you can scale that if you want, but then there's all types of opportunities from there. And you could do it quickly. Man, so ton of value, guys. I hope you guys had a notepad. If not, go back. We touched on a ton of stuff. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on. Super inspiring story. Just that, you know, your why is very super powerful. And just the amount of success you've had in such a short time is unreal, dude. It's pretty remarkable. Where can people find more of your stuff and reach out to you and let them know a little bit about what you got going on?
So again, on all social medias, The Sober Investor. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. And again, we are JVing and partnering across the nation. If you just want to be a landlord, if you are looking for a property, if you want to partner and see how we run our operation, again, nationwide, and we have access to properties in all states. Our housing program right now that we just launched that's nationwide is called Thrive Together Residences. You can work with me and fill out a form. You can go to workwithsoberinvestor.com. If you are out there and just want to invest, we are buying portfolios of 50 beds and up that are already established and taking down some multifamily. If you guys want to be involved in that, and go to investwithapurpose.com. So again, that's thrivetogetherresidences.com, workwithsoberinvestor.com, and investwithapurpose.com.
I love it, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving the people so much value. We got to do a part two again, because I'm sure it's just going to be more massive accomplishments over the next year and to come. And yeah, man, we look forward to speaking more and working with you.
I didn't get to say it, but I don't know if it's too late. But
no, I found
Group Home Riches, I don't know, probably at the beginning of the year. You guys totally changed the game for me. Here in Arizona, there's a lot of regulations. I thought you could only do licensed, and I got turned down for so many homes because there are spacing requirements here in Arizona. And then I started listening to the Group Home Riches. Game changer. I did not know you could do this without a license. Now my goal went from 100 a year. Now I'm going to do 500 a year. And the model has been absolutely amazing. Love your course. The value that you guys give for that price is just insane. And today I started messing with it more. That whole data scrub, yellow pages, calling system. I mean, I've skip traced and have done all of those things. When I seen that, I was like, I never thought of that. That is amazing. I just sent a list to my team of like 2,000 that I just did the data scrub for Texas. But what you guys bring and the value, and you guys have been doing this since 2019. Again, I listen to it every morning and I get gold nuggets every single morning. And you totally changed the trajectory of where I was going with the information that you have given, and you give it out so freely at a great value. So I really appreciate you, Brandon. I really appreciate Andy for putting this together, but Group Home Riches has definitely changed my life, my trajectory, and how I think about helping people in group homes.
Dude, I love to hear that, man. And you're the reason why we do this. So folks that actually take that knowledge and apply it, it works. And we just absolutely love to hear that and love to see it, dude. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for what you and Andy do. It's really changing people's lives and teaching them. And it's just awesome to see a lot of the people that are in the course or have been on your podcast. They're off going and doing coaching here, teaching here, flipping here. And it's amazing the lives that you have changed and the ripple effect that it has.
Well, hey, the demand is massive. You know it after speaking with all these organizations, right? They're dying for investors and people to actually provide the housing. There's a ton of money, like literally billions of dollars that are going into the funding of this type of stuff. So, man, the pie is huge. There's a ton of slices. We want to see everybody eat, and we just love to see it, man. We're just continuing the education, and we thank you for being a part of it, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right.